Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting at republicbroadcasting.org. Today is Tuesday, September 21st, 2021. I'm your host, Richard Carey, and this is Beyond, the official narrative. I would like to remind everyone RBN is listener-supported, folks. Please donate whatever is manageable. And for every $100 donation or more, you get your choice of a high-quality RBN t-shirt, size of your choice, or an official RBN coffee mug. Both excellent ways to spread the word about free speech and style. You know, great conversation starters at the water cooler or walking to the local shop, whatever. Perhaps people will say, hey, what's that RBN there? Or you could point to the shirt and say something. You know, you need to find some real news. Get them asking a question. That's a great win all around, folks. Please take advantage of that whenever you can. And, of course, you could get them for friends and relatives, for that matter. There are many ways you can donate. You can use PayPal on the RBN website donate page. You can call our RBN staff to donate via credit or debit card. Call in to donate at 800-724-2719, extension 3. Or you can mail in that donation, cash, check, money order, to Republic Broadcasting Network, 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. And we greatly appreciate it, folks. Free speech simply cannot exist without being funded by we, the people. So please help ensure that RBN continues broadcasting uncensored content well into the future. Now, I do have a very special guest with me today, folks, and I apologize to he and you, the listeners, for how long it took me to get another, to arrange another interview. But it was actually, let's see, 364 days ago. It was September 22nd last year. I had this gentleman on, and having him back once again, certainly I do plan to have him frequently in the future. I have one Giant Bhandari here. Now, those who may have missed the first interview or maybe forgotten, Giant is a globe-trotting institutional investment consultant who's amassed extensive international experience in the mining and natural resource sector. Apart from his investment insights, he has published numerous interesting analyses on political, cultural, and social issues. While he runs a yearly seminar in Vancouver, Capitalism and Morality. And I'm so thrilled to once again have him here, Mr. Giant Bhandari. Hello, Giant.
Richard, good afternoon, and thanks for having me here.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It's such a pleasure. I mean, I appreciate so much of what information you offer on your website, through your lectures, interviews, and this conference that you hold in Vancouver, this yearly conference. This is all about the virtues of the West. You suggest that the West, the Western civilization, is the only civilization that has ever existed.
Absolutely, Richard. Western civilization was the only civilization that existed. And indeed, values of the West have been copied in East Asia, in Japan, Korea, Taiwan, Singapore, Hong Kong, and increasingly in China. So this is the only civilizational system that the planet has ever seen. Other people, let's say Latin America, Africa, the Arab world, and Indian subcontinent, have never understood the concept of civilization. All they have done is to copy and improve their economic situation because of copying the technical aspects of the Western civilization, Western society, which is only the fruit. But if you don't have the foundations, the fruit rot away, the trees fall apart. And that is exactly what's happening in the third world countries today. They're all fragmenting, they're all falling apart, and there's no civilization in those countries.
And ironically, or perhaps engineered to take down the whole of civilization, we have an attack on the West, on European nations, on any white nations out there right now. And of course, with the immigration, there's a desire to destroy that culture, seeing a colonialism as a plague to the world, which is guilty of all the crimes. Of course, certain groups of bankers and internationalists and religious cults not being considered whatsoever there. But it does seem like it is a structured attack by the elites. And this is very concerning, not just for white people, but for people the world over. Because, I mean, you suggest that these third world nations, for example, left to their own control again, are going to just fall back into the dark ages unless they are once again ruled by Europeans. I mean, that's a pretty bold statement, and it's so politically correct these days. Coming from an Indian gentleman as well, it is a powerful statement to make.
Well, Richard, the population of the third world, so for example, Africa and for example of India, is about 10 times as much as it was before Europeans went to these places, approximately. Now, what these people in Africa and Indian subcontinent have done is that they have negated, they have nullified the advantages that were imposed on them by European colonizers in terms of the institutions that were placed in those places, or in terms of developing the infrastructure, creating organizations, or transferring Western technologies to these countries. Now, remember, in Africa, there was virtually no use of the wheel until the time the Europeans arrived in Africa. They had no concept of proper farming. They had very little concept of tools, and there was very limited languages. And the reason why what you have in Africa is mostly pidgin, a language that mainly transfers basic information. And that is why Africa does not have much of a history, because they did not have a written language. Now, Europeans gave them the fruit. But how do you transfer the roots of the West, which is the Western civilization, Western morality, Western values, to these countries? European missionaries, Christian missionaries, did a beautiful job. And I'm a product of a Catholic school. These people did an absolutely marvelous job trying to inculcate virtues and moralities in these societies. But the problem is that culturally, the third world does not understand the word moral. It does not understand the word virtues. Now, it can, of course, use those words superficially, but in their hearts, they cannot understand what these things mean. Which means that once the fruit have been used up, the tree and the foundations will just fall apart very quickly. And that is exactly what we have seen over the last 10 to 15 years. Let's use the example of the Arab world. Many of the Arab countries, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, were among the richest countries in 1970s. The GDP per capita today in 2021 is about half as much as what it was in 1970s, which means that in the last 50 years, they have reduced their GDP by 50%, despite that so massive amount of technological progress has happened, which basically shows that the effect of the Western civilization have been wearing off in these countries, and eventually they will all fall apart and go back to their dark ages.
Well, I mean, there are so many topics we could spend entire broadcasts on in the future, such as the conditions you describe in India, the population breakdown, really. I mean, well, that alone is very interesting. Most people might not be aware. The West, including China, only accounts for about 2.5 billion. And then we have the other 5 billion which constitutes the remaining third world. Is that about correct?
That is pretty much correct, Richard. And these 5 billion people will reduce to maybe 500 million people in a few decades and maybe earlier. And they will go feral and they will go wild because the institutions that the Europeans left behind for these people have pretty much fallen apart. There is no concept of the law and order in these countries. There's really, these people don't really understand property rights because at the end of the day, they don't understand the concept of morality and virtues.
Well, that is something I was just appreciating your way of clarifying. Rather succinctly, I extracted some of your writings from our interview. During our interview last year, I didn't get a chance to mention too many of them. But yes, I mean, it's the free stuff, basically, that is appealing to these people. There's a very base animal instinct level. Corruption, tribalism, and might is right are the governing principles in society, you mentioned. And then, of course, so as India, for an example, you say for the majority of Indians, life is no better today than what it was in medieval times.
Well, it might be worse in many ways because you have 10 times as many people. There's a lot of pollution. India is one of those countries that that has managed to pollute itself horrendously without actually industrializing. So for a lot of people, I would say at least 90% of the people, life today is worse than it was probably 400 years back because at least there were far fewer people. And the current people, all they do is to pluck fruit from the trees. So there is now 1/10 fruit on per capita basis. The forestry is much smaller. Pollution is everywhere. And there's corruption and tyranny everywhere because there are so many more people. And 10% of the people who may have better lives are exploiters mostly. They exploit these 90% poor people. So at the end of the day, lives of most people is no better than it was before colonizers came. But at least in terms of economic numbers, it is certainly better. Indian GDP per capita in, let's say, 15th century was about $400 per capita. Now it's about $2,000 per capita. Of course, this is an average number, which means that most of this 2,000 GDP per capita belongs to 10% of the elite. And 90% people have even economically not a lot better life than it was 500 years back. But certainly in terms of quality of life, most of the Indians have horrendous life. And I might even say even 10% people that I said are elite are extraordinarily stressed, extraordinarily tired, emotionally tired. They are fighting with each other all the time for political and social supremacy. There's a lot of nihilism in that country. So overall, the quality of life in India is very likely worse than it was 500 years back.
Mm-hmm. I would like to skip this break, if we could, Julie, and perhaps the last break. I want to keep the phone lines closed for today, folks, but in future I'll have days where you can call in as well. I just want to have a good amount of time with our guest here. So the caste issues in India, you've mentioned, especially those issues aimed at the foreign audiences, follow a passive narrative. You say what is really to blame is the utter lack of skills, lack of work ethic, absence of integrity and honesty in work and social relations, tribalism, belief in might is right, and a lack of reason and moral values. You say you cannot make a community proud and honorable by giving them free stuff. The affirmative action policies have trapped those of the lower castes in low-level thinking, cheating assistance.
Yeah, well, Richard, the problem is when it comes to the caste system, the lower caste people are lower caste, and poor people are poor people, lower class people are low economically because they actually lack even the values that the middle class and the upper caste class have. So just blaming India's caste system for its problems is a very linear, superficial, naive way of looking at problems in India. What has happened over the last 70 years is that the lower caste people have got a huge amount of preferences in government jobs, in private sector jobs, as women and people of color have got more preferences in the Western society. But what that leads to is that it leads to those people lacking in merit, rising up in lives, and those people who are lacking in merit but have the power suffer from a small ball syndrome. They want to show off. They are worse exploiters than those people who preceded them. So just thinking that by doing affirmative action you can improve the lives of lower caste people isn't going to happen, because now the lower caste people mostly control the country. The Prime Minister of India is from the lower caste. The President of India is from a very, very low caste. The top layer bureaucracy is increasingly of the lower caste, and they are more vicious, more savage, and they are more of exploiters. And in fact, they don't even help out the people from their own communities, because when they go to their communities, what they expect from their people is slavish behavior. So how have you removed the caste system by inappropriately promoting the lower caste people into the upper caste? But you don't really need me to explain that. You can see that in the US. How has promoting women to higher position and people of color into higher position benefited the US? It hasn't. It's creating a culture of incompetency, a culture of entitlements across the society.
Again, this is So important. And again, people seem to be so conditioned these days and taught of the evil of whites. Hearing this from someone from another culture, an Indian gentleman like yourself, seems to have so much more of a powerful impact, and the parallels confirmed rather than just the rumors about someplace like India to hear is very interesting. I'm not sure what topic really to try to breach next with the time we have. Regarding the changes since all of these lockdowns and everything, in recent times I hear claims that the, at least from what is being claimed of case levels from testing and everything, that there's been a lot of use of antibody treatments like ivermectin, alternatives basically to these mRNA shots that are being pushed so heavily by their manufacturers and governments, and that the cases have subsided, where it seems like India is not on board with pushing these mRNA shots as much as most of the countries of the world, and that we're seeing confirmed reductions, just as many of us would expect who look into it in the independent media, that this isn't something so unique. I have one quote here, though. This was a succinct way it was put by Jim Quinn of the Burning Platform blog regarding the lockdowns. A weaponized flu used as cover for an imploding financial system, an authoritarian global lockdown which has destroyed small businesses and impoverished the working class while enriching mega corporations and the elite ruling class. Now, how much would you yourself disagree or agree with that statement?
At least in India, the consequences of the lockdown have been 100 times worse than they have been in the West, and I would say 1,000 times worse than they have been in the West. The lower class has been relegated into a state of hunger. About 300 million people, which is equivalent to the population of the US, has fallen from poverty to desperate poverty, which means that these 300 new people can no longer fill up their stomachs before they go to sleep. So the whole society has receded backwards drastically. Now, these are simple numbers. 300 million people have now move to desperate poverty. But now when I go to India, and I have been to India about 5 times in the last 1 year, you see beggars everywhere. The people are begging for jobs. I can hire some person to work for me all day for about 10 to 12 hours for about, let's say, $3 or $4 a day without any vacation on daily wages. So that's the kind of desperation has entered that society because of lockdown, and because COVID lockdown has mainly acted as a catalyst to bring India back to its dark ages.
And I've seen other statements where you mention over 80% of people in India survive on less than $2 per day.
Yes.
So that was before all of this. Yeah. So I have to put it in perspective. I mean, that wouldn't be that bad of wages even, which people could get away with paying these people. And so as far as the overall situation, I mean, I don't really want to get into, there's only so much that we could deal with the science. The economic factors are really your expertise. And as far as the 2008 situation, I'm told it was never really fixed at all. Of course, it was just the kicking the can down the road club of the banking elite, basically, and that we're paying for it now, and that the use of this, whatever you want to call SARS-CoV-2, and the exaggeration of its danger is being used because there was an inevitable crash coming. So why not have a controlled demolition of the economy? I mean, do you see that as being correct?
Well, I don't necessarily see this as a controlled demolition. I think it's just sheer stupidity and evil nature of the people who rule us, particularly in the third world, because those rulers simply copy whatever they see happening in the West and what they see happening in China. So China went for a lockdown for about 6 weeks and everyone copied that lockdown. Now, China managed to emerge out of that lockdown in about 6 weeks to 8 weeks, and they have been almost completely open for almost 16 months now. There are virtually no restrictions in China, and most of the China never had any lockdown either. And that has been the case in East Asia, because East Asia is still based on meritocracy. People and experts and politicians emerge in these countries because of meritocracy, a concept they most likely copied from the Western civilization. But we have forgotten about it, Richard, in the West. And the politicians and experts and city hall people, when you come across them, you realize that they are not really meritocratic. They are not really competent. And that is, to a large extent, a product of anti-meritocratic policies that we have adopted in the West. And it gets far worse in the third world, because real tyrants, real stupid people rise up in a democratic system of the third world, where people have no moral or virtue-based thinking. So they vote based on tribalism and exploitation and all the religious and linguistic feelings that they have within themselves. And as a result, what you have as leaders and experts, so-called experts in the third world, are true idiots. They have no organizational capabilities to bring a controlled demolition of the economy. They're just so stupid that the economy falls apart by itself.
Yes, so I see. So opportunists, especially at the mid and lower levels, is all that's really facilitating all of this. I have heard it mentioned, though, that this is the greatest transfer of wealth in history to the richest, and of course taking out a large amount of the middle class, which some suggest would be very difficult to recover from, to ever change back.
Yeah, well, Richard, we have been consuming capital in the West for the last many decades. And what I said, the feral, wild character of the third world has rapidly been adopted and adapted in the first world. The woke people that we increasingly see in the West, in the US, where these rioters and this stupid organization called BLM and Antifa, the so-called Antifa, are woke people. They are not communists. They are feral, wild people. They have no values, no moral values, and they have no concept of what is right and what is wrong. And that is exactly the culture of the third world countries. And we have open-mindedly allowed these people to get elevated into a political power. And that is going to create horrendous destruction in the first world, because we have given political power and social power and virtue signaling power to exactly those people who are totally incompetent of understanding what virtues and morality means.
Well, there certainly does seem to be a planned push from some think tanks, of course, in high places. I mean, we're by this point all aware of the World Economic Forum and even their event 201 on the ways to deal with the pandemic, really to push toward their New World Order Agenda 21 goals.
Absolutely, Richard. And that is because these people have become, these are extremely naive people. I remember reading a lot of work written by the head of the World Economic Forum. I mean, that was like an essay written by a primary school student. They want a great reset. They think no one should have private property and then everyone will be happier. No, everyone won't be happier. Human beings feel happiness through achieving something. That is how we are constructed. If we just have all the material goods we want, we just get frustrated and actually violent. That's what BLM and Antifa are all about. These are well-fed people who have all that they want to eat and drink and all the sex that they want in life. And it's still they are writing because their lives are empty, because there is no purpose in their life. We feel happiness through purposes in our lives. So these people who run World Economic Forum, the World Bank, these are naive, stupid people. They are childish because they have never really lived a real life. What these people have done is that they grew up in relatively decent families in a very comfortable environment of the West, and they went to Ivy League colleges, and then they got a quarter of a million per year salaries in the World Bank and in World Economic Forum, and they think they understand the world. They have no clue about the world. They have no clue about what is behind the poverties of the third world countries. They go to countries like Rwanda and they go to the capital, a chauffeur-driven car comes to pick them up from the airport to their five-star hotel in the capital of Rwanda, and they suddenly start saying, hey, Rwanda is progressing faster than Singapore is. Hey, these are idiotic institutional bureaucrats who understand nothing, who haven't walked about 100 meters away from the highway they are traveling on. They don't understand that the Mercedes air-conditioned, chauffeur-driven Mercedes Benz that they comes to pick them up from the airport to the hotel would have cost as much as the annual GDP per capita of a Rwandan.
We have the bottom of the hour break. We'll be back in just a few minutes, folks. Stick around.
Truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. its database of products not kosher certified, is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Kosher-tified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. Fuck you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
They're making the last film. They say it's the best, and we'll help make it. It's called The Death of the West. The kids from fame will all be there. Free Coca-Cola for you.
And we are back, folks. Beyond the official narrative, Republic Broadcasting. Richard Carey here with my special guest today, Jayant Bhandari. And so you don't see these elites with their plans for all these machinations, manipulations toward their Agenda 21 Great Reset as being very realistic, certainly not very sustainable, Jayant. It's interesting because, I mean, we've had these sort of elitist think tanks for quite a long time. Many would confirm hundreds, if not thousands, of years, but at least in recent history, like the beginning of the 20th century, had a lot of these sort of futurist elitist groups who wanted to shape the future and humans with it.
Yeah, Richard, the elite that we have today are not natural elite. They are not philosophers. They are not people who are wise. They are just naive people who went to the right schools and the right universities, who had the right contacts and got into the right jobs. These are not the elite who had an honorable rise in power through as being warriors or as being philosophers or as being wise people in the society, which is what the kind of elite we had in the past. So the whole pyramid of meritocracy has been inverted today. And these people are simply naive, stupid people who don't really understand the second order and third order effect of their decision making. So they have been destroying the society, not necessarily through their organization, but because evil, stupidity, and simplicity, naivety coagulates and work together to destroy the society. Now, these BLM people, for example, if you individually ask them, they don't know each other. They are just there to have fun. They want to rob some stores and they get a good excuse to rob this store. They think that being feral will improve their lives. What they are basically doing is that they are destroying the civilization. And in a way, the elite that we have today are no different from these BLM members who are not really members. They just come together because they have very materialistic, selfish, base animalistic desires to improve their personal lives, when they completely forget about the society because they destroy the institutions and they destroy public peace.
There's a quote of yours from one of your writings I'd like to cite. Western culture, which developed organically over at least the 2.5 millennia, starting from Greco-Roman philosophers, is not easy to duplicate. This culture requires thrift, honesty, hard work, liberty, individuality, dispassionate reason, objective justice, loyalty, honor, stoicism, a desire to rise above oneself, and many other factors that perhaps cannot be seen or isolated, but must be absorbed subliminally in all their complex interactions. These are reflected in social, religious, and political structures of the West, the three independent branches of government, the rule of law, compassion for others, charity, family systems, etc.
Yeah, and I might have forgotten to mention Christianity in that equation. Christianity has been a very strong pillar of the Western civilization. And what we have seen is that as Christianity has faded away in the West, as simplistic enlightenment has emerged, the secular enlightenment has emerged, we have lost touch with the concept of honor, virtues, and really these are the concepts that don't come easily and are not easily transferable to the next generation. They come in a very subliminal fashion. And to what you said, I completely agree with. I wrote that, but as time has passed, I have started to include Christianity as a very important component of the Western civilization. But that's only Christianity of the West. Christianity in the third world is mostly voodoo. I have spent a lot of time in Latin America over the last 1 year, and whatever I see as Christianity in Latin America is voodoo, and it gets far worse in the Caribbean islands, in Africa, and in countries like India.
And as far as my mentioning how there is this push by these elites, nonetheless, using everything possible, all their financial resources, influence over governments, the schooling system, as far as indoctrinating the youth, the Hollywood culture, television, films, video games, music stars, everything is very anti-white now, quote-unquote traditionalist, and it is very much, though, I mean, changing the average demographic of, a lot of America, and I don't know how much, I'm sure a good part of Europe with their youth especially as well. I mean, many suggested this is such a long-term game that they're playing, even if they're foolish like children regarding sustainability and being realistic about what they think they can have for an outcome that will continue to sustain them and their lifestyles. Nonetheless, what they think robots will take care of them soon enough, I guess. but nonetheless, I mean, we have an effect that is pretty severe and is going to take a while to at least revert from. So there's a war of ideas. I've heard, I think, Daniel Freeberg mention. I really liked that, this war of ideas. And it's a generational thing. I mean, it could take a while, perhaps, to, get the pendulum to shift in the thinking of the West to not hate our people. They have done severe damage You have to admit that, Giant. So what are your recommendations? I mean, some suggest having their own communities, even including bartering and farming, if all of these mandates get more severe. But, you know, just this attack on the native people of our lands, like how, other than having our own little communities outside the system, what recommendations do you have?
So firstly, Richard, you mentioned a term, the war of ideas. There's no war of ideas. There is, on one side, you have ideas, and on the other side, you have feral, wild, simplistic, naive, and stupid people. The woke culture has no ideas. As long as communists were there, at least they had some ideas. The woke people have simply no ideas. They are materialistic, animalistic people. Now, what can we do about it? What you have to do is to look at the map of the world. There are about 200 countries, and it's very easy to glean out some statistics from that. Every country that became a civilization had white majority, European majority. Now, this is just a fact. This is not a racist comment. This is just a fact. Now, the only countries that copied the Western civilization and became better societies were East Asian countries. So apart from Europe, countries with European majority or East Asian majority, there is no country, not a single country on the planet that is prosperous or stable. You can look at all the countries in which Latin Americans, native Latin Americans are in majority, or Africans are in majority, or Indian subcontinent people are majority. They are tribal, lawless, tyrannical, obnoxiously wretched, poverty-ridden places, because that is what these people are like. So now, looking at, you asked me, what should the West do about it? I think the West should completely close its gates to immigration yesterday. Now it's too late for at least the U.S. Close to half of the population of the U.S. is now already made up of people who are of non-European origin. I am merely talking facts here. There is no racism here. I came to the West not because I wanted to be among non-European people. I came to the West, and every person who immigrates to the West comes looking for European people, because they instinctively know that European people are the best managers. Now, the fact is that you ask all these feminist women or people of color and ask them randomly, who would they ideally work for, be to have as their bosses? And they will almost invariably respond that they would prefer to have a white male of European origin as their bosses. The problem is that's not what they say publicly. Women get together to fight in a feminist system. Blacks get together to fight against the white people. But when it comes to their individual lives, they prefer to have a white European person as their boss, because they all know that their lives improve when they are in a system in which white males run the organization. Now, that does not mean East Asians, blacks, and Indians are not competent, but a far fewer number of those are competent, and that is why the countries that they left behind are in such disarray.
Well, it then is a challenging way to proceed with all of the hiring policies now, of course, as you mentioned, favoring anything but the white, the European male. And I mean, it's not even interpreted as discrimination, racism, and not even equality, because too many people are talking about merit and meritocracy these days, dismantling their arguments. So equity is their new term, where they can just have this foggy this sort of no man's land they don't really have to define into perpetuity for these policies.
Yes, and the problem, Richard, is that America will have huge social problems because it's today a very fragmented society. The benefits, the superficial benefits that came from the 1960s era have all gone away. Now you have, let's say, blacks asking for a safe spaces in universities, which is actually nothing else than blacks asking for self-segregation. Now, 20 years later, the blame will all go to the white people and they will say that white people created segregation and the world will have forgotten about it because political correctness would not let us continue to keep the memory of how the segregation started, let's say, in today's times. And unfortunately, this is very natural to people. People like to stick with people of their own kinds. But because a lot of people outside Europe have this culture of entitlements and the culture of getting free stuff, they have come to realize that blaming everything on white people, the people of European ethnicity, allows them to get resources for free. They all really understand that white people are not, European people in general are not exploiters, but just complaining gets them resources. And these are people who have no virtues and honor. So why not complain? Because for them, there's no guilt consciousness when it comes to exploiting the situation for their material benefits.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, we could have as some project, you know, an effect of most of the first world declining to the standards of, well, at least the developing, well, not developing, I guess, just the second world, at the very least. And there's a claim of bringing the third world up and meeting in the middle. That's what these unrealistic planners of the world, these so-called elites, so supposedly have had leaked out at times, you know, just a level playing field, everyone with a moderate set of freedoms and technology. But that isn't at all realistic. It's even not even possible, especially under self-governance, you suggest, for these third world countries. Certainly not. Another quote of yours here, that the low-hanging fruit the internet offered has now been plucked. Regarding any boom from, you know, the dot-com and early internet profitability, even in India and other lands. But you then mentioned what emerges is an extremely ugly future for the third world. Venezuela, Syria, Iraq, Libya, Zimbabwe, Pakistan, Iran, and the rapidly worsening South Africa aren't isolated countries, but a part of the third world trend.
Yeah, Richard, so when I was working in India in 1991 onwards, if I had to make a phone call to someone in a different city, the phones usually did not work. There was no concept of cellular technology. So it was not impossible that I needed to travel 3 days by train to get somewhere to be able to talk with that person, because the telephony was extremely expensive and sometimes simply did not work. Now, what happened was that when you got cellular technology, a lot of migrant workers, a lot of people were able to talk with people on the other side of the country and also transfer money to people in the other side of the country. Migrant laborers could just transfer money rather than having to travel by themselves to the other part of the country to deliver cash to their families. So those things improved the economic structure of the country. But now most of what cellular technology is being used for is to watch pornography and to exchange superstitious concepts. The end result is that, yes, the first wave brought in benefits and the next several waves created massive problems for the society. Now you have massive reduction in productivity because when people are in their offices, they're watching porn or doing whatever else on their mobile phones. So the benefits have been used up. People are bored, they are depressed. Having more money when you are not deserving of it destroys your soul. And that is why what you see in Turkey, particularly Turkey, is a very interesting trend. If you look at the trend in Turkey from 1995 for the next 15 years onwards, is a massive economic boom in Turkey on per capita basis. But at exactly the same time, Turkey was becoming increasingly fanatic. So what you see in the Arab world is something very similar. They became extremely popular, rich, but they at the same time became extremely fanatic. So education, prosperity, and democracies have destroyed these societies because naive, simplistic people, the woke people, think that democracy, education, and prosperity improves the minds of people in the third world. No, it actually worsens it and worsens the minds and corrupts those minds. And that is exactly what's happening in the third world. And the ultimate consequences will be that 90% of the third world populations will disappear because they are just so disorganized and so animalistic in their thinking. And because the fall will be from a higher estate, the end consequences, at least in the transitionary period, will be worse than what they were like 500 years back. And as I earlier said to you, very likely the quality of life of most Indians is far worse than it was in the 15th century.
And with the few minutes we have left today, I should first mention, folks, if you want to check out more of Jayant's work or get in touch, jayantbhandari.com is his website, jayantbhandari.com. As far as the current economic situation, though, I just heard about this Evergrande property company in China. They're saying some are claiming it's bigger than Lehman Brothers. I mean, even if something happens to the markets in China that could affect things globally, would they be just as likely to, bail people out and manipulate the markets, just as we see here, where it wouldn't be any more likely to be? I mean, would there be an accidental crash with all these machinations, or is that impossible?
Well, Richard, as you can clearly see, China has avoided helping out Evergrande. And this shows that China is today a more capitalistic, more moral country, at least in this respect, than what the West was, what America was when it dealt with Lehman crisis and Bear Stearns crisis. So China has avoided interfering in what's happening with some of its property companies. And I actually invest in some of those property companies, and I have lost a lot of money. And it is my mistake. I should suffer. Why should the taxpayers suffer? So I am so glad that China is not interfering in bailing out these companies, which is what exactly the right thing to do. So I congratulate China for whatever it has done, and we should learn from it. Companies that are too big to fail should actually fail so that we can re-emerge without those companies and organizations that are too big to fail. Because if we don't let them fail and if we don't eradicate these horrible companies or horrible organizations, they will come and haunt us forever, which is exactly what's happening in the US. The banks have become worse. The paper currency system has become far worse than it was in 2008. And our economic fragility has increased horrendously since 2008.
And another quote you mentioned, going back, a year or so, printing currency does not create wealth. It merely creates an illusion of wealth while leading to a misallocation of capital from savers to consumers and from those who can use it more efficiently to those who are politically connected, making the economy increasingly suboptimal. The illusions of Keynesianism create a morally corrupt society.
Yes, and that has increasingly happened in the West, Richard, and that is what I say. Our meritocratic structure has been completely inverted now. We have the exploiters, the decadent, depraved people having reached higher positions in the government. And all you have to do is to look at my prime minister, I'm a Canadian, Justin Trudeau. I mean, he is not even competent to be a primary school teacher, and he has ended up becoming the prime minister, partly because of his looks, partly because he comes from a well-connected family. But Canadians should have thought about who they voted for, and they have just re-elected him as the next prime minister as well. And then you see the same thing in the US as well. I mean, who were the people who went to vote for Biden and Harris? I mean, what were these people thinking? So, you know, democracy has had horrendous consequences. Masses don't really think. They think from their stomach and from their genitals. And that's what they have done by voting for these truly naive, stupid, and psychopathic people into positions of power, and we are destroying the West as a result of it.
Yes, well, we are almost out of time here, only about a minute and a half left. But I know, I seriously, I guess I was distracted really by covering the developments with these mandates, lockdowns, the shots, and but I mean, I definitely wish to have you on more frequently. And I guess because your time zone is the same as RBN here at the station, Central, you say that wouldn't be a problem. So we do look forward to having you more regularly, sir. If you have any parting words and advice until we speak next.
Well, you know, the West has become too comfortable. They don't want to, they want to take zero risks with the lives of people. A COVID situation is a problem, but it's not a pandemic. Pandemic is one in which 10 to 20% of the population disappears. COVID has statistically shown to be a minor problem compared to what pandemic is, which does not mean I don't give any weight to COVID, but we have taken far stronger actions in the West and elsewhere in the world to deal with COVID than we should have. These mandates will destroy our freedoms. These compulsory vaccinations will destroy us as a society.
Thank you so much for coming on, sir. And yeah, I do look forward to hearing from you again, Giant.
Thank you very much for having me, Richard.
Yes, sir. And again, folks, that's giantbandari.com to check out his website. I do recommend you do giantbhandari.com. And please support the station, folks. We do require your donations as the primary way we pay the bills each month. Stick around for Patrick Slattery with National Bugle Radio. He's an excellent broadcast. And we will speak again soon. Transcend the construct. Regards.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.